Che. So now we are coming to the last three chapters, but this is a kind of penultimate chapter, a very important one, the most important one, actually, because the 22nd chapter, which you will be read back in the Supreme Secret. So this is the 18th chapter of the Gita, and main focus is on verse 73, but in the previous chapter we read from 57 to 66 and then 73.
So, what is this supreme secret? Because we are told that the age of secrets is over. But there is still a secret, a greater secret, and the Gita speaks of three secrets primarily. The first secret it reveals is the secret of the divine taking a human body. It's a secret for the for a human being to understand that the divine can limit himself, take a human body. Basically, it implies that the divine has sacrificed himself in matter and takes a human body so that matter can evolve, humanity can evolve towards its final destination. So this is the first secret. The second secret is he dwells within the human body and we can contact him. So this is the other secret. And the final secret, which we know that it comes toward the end of the 18th chapter of the Gita, that he is not just an impersonal reality behind this creation, because that would make the entire creation absurd. This is a big paradox that we find in teachings which say that there is this creation which is going on, rolling in its own way. Behind it, there is a reality which is impersonal, vast. It has, actually, there is nothing which corresponds between this and that. So, it leaves a big question mark. Where has this come from? And if this is the goal, then what is the meaning of all our so-called personality, our thought, our intelligence, will, love? These have no meaning at all. Because if ultimately annulment of all this is what the divine intends or ever wanted, or if there is a divine at all, even that turns into a question mark, that there is an impersonal reality known as Brahman. So the Gita brings to our bold relief, and in fact the first time in such a clear-cut way, that there is beyond the Brahman is a way of saying, because technically Brahman is the highest reality, or we may say holding within itself the Brahman, or extending, if you extend the Brahman, where does it lead us, that vast impersonal silence? It leads us to the supreme divine personality. This is a greatest secret, that there is a divine personality. Now, we may like it, we may not like it. Logic finds it very difficult to accept it. It's easier for the logical mind to accept that there is this creation somehow which has come into being through all the play of forces, through evolutionary process, etc., etc. Beyond it, there is a silence of nirvana. This the logical mind can understand, accept, that this is a game which has somehow come. Beyond it has to be nothing else but silence. But the origin itself is the divine, a divine personality is very difficult for the human mind to accept. Because then the question will be how this divine personality came into existence. Now that answer is there. It's there not in the Gita, but Sri Aurobindo speaks about this answer, that it's looking at the same reality. If you look at it one way, you find it purely Parabrahman, which is beyond all qualities, beyond any kind of description. But if you look at it from another way, it is the Sagun Brahman, the divine personality which is formed itself. So it is two sides of the same reality. And the supreme secret is that if the human consciousness can hand over itself to this reality, this truth, now it's no more a reality or truth, but the Purushottama, the Uttam Purusha, the third three Purushas of which Gita reveals, if it can give itself to the divine, where he is present in matter and he is present in our human body, and he takes a human body to lead mankind. So he has made it very easy for us. And if the human consciousness, human being can give itself to this divine who is within him, around him, everywhere, then he is lifted up as if by magic, if you may say so, and the whole personality starts undergoing a transmutation. Gita doesn't talk of the transformation but leads us to the door. From there, Shobindo's yoga will begin with this grand surrender. Because the logic of transformation is that there is all that we experience in our human personality is a miniature of something else which is far greater and which is the true origin. So there is something called as divine love, just as we have a human love. There is something called as a divine intelligence, just as we have a human intelligence. Something called as divine mind, just as we have a human mind. And there is something called as a divine life, he's living, just as we have a human life. And even the body, there is a divine body made of that original matter, just as we have a human body. So this is a miniature, a distorted form of that truth. And all nature is ultimately trying to take it to that point, because that is the original plan, ekoham bahushyam. It's not just that the divine wanted to become many just for the sake of it's not just many in the form of many aspects of the divine, that is one part, but they are actually the divine in all the multitude of human beings. And that's what we see in one of the stories where during the dance of Krishna with all the gopis. So the dance is depicted as that there is not one Krishna but many Krishnas. And with each gopi there is Krishna. So there is a very unique bond which develops between a human being and the divine, and through which each human being undergoes a transmutation, divine transmutation, in his own unique way. It's not a standardization. That's why this world has been created, unity in diversity. So Gita doesn't reveal all this but takes us to the door. Sri Aurobindo will take it one step further. But suffice it to say that the supreme secret is basically to give oneself to the divine. That is the supreme secret, and sounds very easy, but in principle it's extremely difficult, because to do this, the jiva or the embodied being has to realize itself not just as the mind, vital, emotion or physical being, because they cannot give. When mind gives itself, it will keep on questioning time to time. Is there really something like the divine? What is he like? Is it correct that if I give myself, it is a priori doubts? And the vital, if it gives itself, wants a return. That's the nature of the vital. What am I going to get in return if I give myself to the divine? And poor body has to just follow what these two creatures are doing. But the day, the moment the jivatma understands or realizes who it is, in Sri Aurobindo's terminology, the psychic being, then to give itself is the most natural, not even the logic is still one step further, most natural, inevitable movement. And in this act of self-giving through the jivatma, the psychic being, to the divine who is embodied in whatever form, lies the great secret. So if one has reached this point, rest of, you know, one is through. That's why Sri Aurobindo insisted so much on discovery of the psychic being. Because it is this nodal point. It knows the nature. It is actually the master of nature. But right now it is more or less hidden. So it is at the mercy of its ministers. The day the psychic being wakes up and starts gathering all the different aspects of nature which are here and there scattered. And then it says, look here, we are not here for satisfaction of Mr. Ego. It's gone. So they ask, what are we here for? We are here for the divine. And then the psychic being compels them to give to the divine. And as they are given to the divine, they come back in their divine aspects. It's like, you know, there is a story about Arjun, because Arjun is a very strange, interesting character. If you see in Shri Krishna Leela, you have all the gopis and gops. Their love for Shri Krishna is unparalleled, complete giving. But the only character who is very interestingly gives himself in that way and much more is Arjun. And Arjun is regarded, even in the Gita, he says, you are very dear to me. You are dearest to me. Life after life, they have been together. So, but Arjun is neither regarded as a gop or a gopi. So there is a story that there, the place where Shri Krishna used to have a dance with the gops and gopis, it's called Nidhivan in Vrindavan. So Arjun wants to experience that. I want to experience that dance. Shri Krishna says, you are an adhikari at one level because you have given yourself to me. But still, a man cannot go and dance there with me. You have to get transmuted into a woman. So he says, what do I do about it? He says, there is water in the Yamuna at a particular time. You go take a dip. When you come out, you will assume the body of a woman, a being of a woman. And then you can come and dance. So he is supposed to be the one and only unique character who has witnessed the dance and dances with Sri Krishna in Vrindavan. This is, of course, the story part of it, but very fascinating, because he has gone with Sri Krishna into the world and has given himself completely, unconditionally. That's why in the Gita starts from there, that I am your disciple, tell me what I should do, because I am confused state. I don't know what should be my dharma. So all these dharmas fail him. And that point of time, Shri Krishna reveals. Now here on the battlefield, Arjun, who is asking the question, gradually as we see the series of questions, he is now, it's not just the warrior Arjun who is speaking outwardly. It is the Jivatma who has awakened. And the one who is answering is not just Shri Krishna the avatar, but Shri Krishna who is the Supreme Lord. So the self-giving of the psychic being, of the soul to the divine Purushottama, that is the greatest secret. And Mother speaks about it. She says, those who know it will get redeemed just by the power of faith. This is there in her writing. He says, this is the great last secret, the greatest secret revealed in the Gita. That if you can give yourself to the divine completely, then the divine redeems you. This is the basic supreme secret. Leading us. So the question, why is he leading us in this? Why doesn't he say in the beginning, look here Arjun, don't ask questions. If you don't ask questions and give yourself to me, everything will be fine. No. So in the Gita, surrender comes after a long process. Otherwise, mind will say, okay. And then ask 10 questions every day. Why this happened to me? Why that happened to me? Why that is happening there? Why this is happening here? So this is how the mind will proceed. The vital will give, but after some time, say somebody was saying he had such an experience, but I didn't have any experience. Will I have the experience? So it comes at the closing point. That's why it is the supreme secret. It is reserved for someone who has either by past lives, by special grace, is prepared to make this supreme act of self-surrender. It is very difficult, actually, when you meet people, it's so strange. Everything else one can do, debate, discussion, analyze, speak, write, everything. But to make that gesture of complete self-giving, and Mother says this is the key. There is a letter of Sri Aurobindo, after which we'll read some passages. The letter is when Sri Aurobindo is asked that, what is the secret of this yoga? So he says there are two secrets. First is a psychic opening and giving to the mother. First secret. And then he doesn't say the second secret. So the disciple asks again, sir, what about the second secret? Then he says aspiration for the divine life. If you have done that, psychic opening, it's not just that I'm reading, that's one kind of opening, intellectual opening, emotional opening, but a psychic opening to the Divine Mother. So, 40, people often say yoga is difficult. Yoga is so complicated. Oh, Shurabindo's yoga is so difficult. Honestly, I'm saying, seriously. I have read almost most of the major books on yoga by all the different authors and, you know. And when I read Sri Aurobindo, somehow I said, this is a yoga which is the easiest of all. Because what is he saying?
Therefore, says the teacher, in the last passage on page 540, devoting all thyself to me, giving up in thy conscious mind all thy actions into me, restoring to yoga of the
will and intelligence, be always one in heart and consciousness with me. He will develop it and come to that point. Manmana bhav madbhakta madhyaji ma namaskuru. Tyaja mamekam sharanam praja. He'll lead us to that.
If thou art that at all times,
then by my grace thou shalt pass safe through all difficult and perilous passages. Now this is interesting. Here Sri Aurobindo writes this way, he writes in the Mother, to walk through life armored against all fear, peril and disaster, only two things are needed. The grace of the Divine Mother and on your side an inner state made up of faith, sincerity and surrender. Now in both of them we see that we have to walk through life. There will be difficulties, dangers, peril, but we are carried safe through it. This is a fundamental thing. So he says, thou shalt pass safe, not bypass, pass safe through all difficult and perilous passages. But now comes a very important thing which I feel, especially when one has turned towards Mother and Sri Aurobindo, one needs to remember, or any path of yoga. Not entering a path is fine. In the sense you are exploring intellectually. Entering a path and leaving it is a far more serious problem. There is a story of one very well-known person who had joined the ashram and then he left and went because he wanted to, you know, some philosophical whatever post, and he went away. Then someone asked Dhyuman Bhai, will he come back? Dhyuman Bhai said, yes, but we don't know how many lives. That's very serious. If you have not entered, it's okay. But if you have entered, resist all temptation, even if the body is going to shreds. That's how yogis who have walked the path have said. Whatever may happen, after that it's like divine's business, not my business. He says, but if from egoism thou hear not, thou shalt fall into perdition. At quite a few places Sri Krishna says that. Vain is this thy resolve, that in thy egoism thou thinkest, saying, I will not fight.
Don't things happen that
when they are not our way, we say, oh, where is divine?
Let me know. This is how the forces come. We don't say we don't understand the play of the divine. We should say, okay, that's how it is.
But we start going on revolt, we go on strike, and sometimes we even leave the path. That fall from the path is far worse. Nothing is like irreparable, but the point is we don't know how, because it's a great opportunity.
And sometimes these things come,
the word of the adversary, when we are very close, that's the time they come. What from delusion thou desirest not to do, that helplessly thou shalt do, bound by thy own work, born of thy swabhav. So what will be the difference? Arjun will anyways one day jump into the battle. But now he is being instructed by Sri Krishna himself. That look, this is the purpose. Come, fight. If he comes when he sees his own kith and kin dying, then he has lost a chance. Though his swabhav will put him into it. Classic example is of Achilles in the Trojan War. Achilles goes because he is moved by the ideal at that point of time. He has decided not to enter into war. But
when he hears, He is moved because he is a young boy, and yet he goes finally. That okay, I go. You have a just cause. But he goes there. He fights with the king. Why he fights with Agamemnon? Because he has taken over his girlfriend. He says, "No, then I will not fight anymore on that side." And because of that, he doesn't fight for a long time. He just stays in his camp. He says, "I am not going to fight." He even offers to the opposite side, to King Priam, that I'll fight from your side if your daughter gets married to me. Just imagine how the mind works. And then at that point, destiny has its way. So his own nephew dies in the battle, is killed by Hector because he thinks his nephew has stolen his helmet. So Hector and everybody thinks it is Achilles, and they kill him. When he comes to know this, he jumps into the battle. You can't escape with his destiny, but there is a difference. He could have fought the hero's way, and then he ultimately fights, he does play a great role, and ultimately dies. He falls very anonymous way with the arrow of Paris, which pierces his Achilles' heel. So he says, you will be destined, you will be pushed into it by your own somehow. You won't be able to watch all this massacre. You are a true Kshatriya. But if you heed my words, the gates are open. Otherwise, if you, for whatever reason you do, then there is perdition. So, the line is started, you know. Heaven's call is there, there at the heart that heals. The Lord is stationed in the heart of all existences, O Arjuna, and turns them all round and round, mounted on a machine by Maya. I
love this, you know, it sounds, some people feel very bad about it. Oh, he is running us like a machine. I said, thank God he is running and not the America's president or India's president or anybody's president. Thank God, ultimately, the Lord is running. So, you know, he knows how to play the game. It's such a relief that he is running. Okay, I give myself to you. Yantra Rudini Maya. In him, take refuge in every way of thy being, and by his grace, thou shalt come to the supreme peace and the eternal status. So ultimately, it is the word of grace that if you give yourself to the divine, in any case, it is the grace that reveals itself. As the Upanishad also says, Yam Vesha Vranute Tena Labhyas Tashyesa Atma Vibranute Tanu Swam. It, by its own grace, it will reveal. But when we give ourselves, we, with faith, with sincerity, with surrender, then we prepare in us a state for the grace to act. This is the only difference. So, a few lines below. The words express the most complete, intimate and living relation possible between God and man. How beautiful this is. See how far he's taking it. It goes beyond, you know, 1 hour or 2 hours of standard technique of meditation or some pranayama or some practice. See, what was special about gopis? When Uddhav says, you guys are mad. You don't know yoga. He says, okay, teach us. So he says, first you have to control your prana by pranayama. It's very interesting. Uddhav visits Vrindavan, no? He tells Krishna, what is this mad people running after you? Why don't you teach them yoga? He says, you go, you are a yogi, you are a tapasvi, you are a jnani. I don't have time. So he goes there to teach them. And he tells them that, look here, you people are just madly in love. This is not the way. So they ask, what is the way? He says, you have to practice pranayama. So the gopis say, okay, just one question. One prana we have given it to Krishna. What pranayama now you want us to? Where do we get that prana? At the end, Uddhav goes to meet Radha. He says, I'll try to convince her, then you people will understand. So he tells Radha, let's see, Krishna has gone away. He's not here. He's on a work. You have to actually meditate. Radha listens. He says, okay, where has he gone? He says, he's gone to Mathura. He says, yes, but he's everywhere. He's here. I see him. He's totally shocked And then she grants him the vision to see Krishna everywhere. When he comes back, he says, now I understand why you sent me all the way. So that I learn and comes. So that is the secret, which is so difficult for the intellectual mind with the ego hold so strong. It will raise 10 questions. So here he says, express the most complete, intimate and living relation possible between God and man. Instinct with the concentrated force of religious that springs from the human being's absolute adoration, his upward surrender of his whole existence, his unreserved and perfect self-giving to the transcendent and universal divinity from whom he comes and in whom he lives. How beautiful, if one can do this. And then he tells us once again, who is this divine master? Some say, oh, all this is human play and
there is Ishta Devata, there is a human form of the God. But God, divine is beyond. You can't even call him God. He's impersonal. So master can lead you to the impersonal reality. That's his job description. Now I'll show you the reveals, two lines below. It is no abstract absolute of the philosopher. No indifferent, impersonal presence or ineffable silence, intolerant of all relations, to whom this complete surrender of all our works can be made, and this closeness and intimacy of oneness within all the parts of our consciousness, conscious existence, imposed as the condition and law for perfection. This is what he said, that the divine is impersonal Brahman. The master becomes just a conduit. He teaches you a few things, maybe he can help you, but ultimately you realize that you cannot form any relation because it's featureless, formless. That's what it is. It has no qualities, nothing which corresponds to anything human in us. You have to leave behind the human. But here, of whom this divine intervention and protection and deliverance are the promise. You walk the path, there is a protection on the path. There is the assurance of a deliverance. That's how Sri Krishna puts it, that this is my promise to you. Promise of the deliverance. It is a master of our works, a friend and lover of our soul. This I often feel that one of the unique things about Indian thought systems. You know, it's very unfortunate that you only now talk about Vedanta, 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 which is wonderful, I mean, without doubt. But we miss upon something very important, the relationship with the divine, living relation. Because, you know, as we know that even Veda Vyas, when he is asked, he is very after he is organizing the Vedas, he has not composed the Vedas. But he put them in sections and still he is somewhere unhappy and restless. And Narada tells him, I know why you are restless. He says, what is the reason? He says, because you have combined the Vedas but you have not written about Krishna. And then he says, yeah, I have used a word for him, aparime, beyond measure. He says, yes, but is that enough? So he meditates and realizes that he has not written about the final secret. That's how the Bhagavad is born, the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because he writes about Krishna, the duties of the divine, the pastimes of the Lord, which is which is missed out. So who is he? What is our relation with the divine? He is master of our works. So we work for him. Whatever outwardly, we may be working anywhere. You may be working in that department, this department, anywhere. Outwardly, somebody may think he is working for me. Let him be fooled. One is working for the divine. How beautiful that whole thing changes. A friend and lover of our soul. This is very beautiful. Divine is friend. I mean, what friendship one will need? You can say anything to him. And he is with us. Friend is always with us. Friend is the most beautiful relationship. Of course, a beloved is the most intense, but friend is a very beautiful relationship. So, and lover, so is both an intimate spirit of our life, an indwelling and overdwelling God of all our personal and impersonal self and nature. Personal self and the impersonal, he says he is the Lord and nature, who alone can utter to us this near and moving message. Therefore, he reminds us, and yet this is not the common relation established by the religions between man living in his sattvic or other ego mind and some personal form and aspect of the being. This is not what is normally spoken of. Even where there is the personal dimension, it's in India through a Christian Jivita. Not as the supreme reality, he is the person, Godhead, he is the person. All our apparent personality is derived from him.
I have always a question. A friend of the mother of the Lord,
yes, so,
and a child of the mother.
Yes, so child of the mother, that is not here because Sri Krishna is Sri Krishna. But child of the mother comes later in synthesis. Sri Aurobindo says that. And he says that while friend and lover is the ultimate, lover and beloved, because then it's a no holds barred relationship. A complete fusion. But just short of that is the mother and the child relation. And he says the divine mother relation, why it is so special? He says the child's soul goes to the divine mother in all its difficulties. And then he says further, and the divine mother wants it to be so that she can pour her heart of love. So it is a different bond. So there is a story here, actually. Even Nanda writes about this story. So, they did, normally whenever people used to go, they would tell their mother that we are going here, we go at this time, come back at this time. So once they went for swimming and they didn't tell the mother. They thought it's okay. Nanda felt, we are just going to swimming, we will come back. So mother wrote in her diary, now my children feel that they have grown up, and they don't need me anymore. So Lord, I want to ask whether I should continue or withdraw. This fell in the hands of Dada, and he felt very sorry about it. She wants it. It's not like we are burdening her. She wants it. That, you know, this is the bond between a mother and child is like that. Unlike any other relation. Friend is with us, but if somebody may say we don't need you, he'll say, okay, I respect your privacy. But mother, the ones that you tell me, I want to be with you, protect you, guide you, whatever you may do, mother may scold you, but she will yet protect you. So that's why the mother and child, Sri Krishna doesn't mention here explicitly, though he says that I am the Ketada Yoni, I am the home of all creatures. But the relation which he has come to establish upon earth is of a friend and lover. That's very high. But mother is something very unique, which Shivanko brings to us. So who makes the surrender? This is important. 542. The paragraph begins with that which surrenders here is the jiva, the essential soul, the original central and spiritual being of man, that individual purusha. And that's why Shivindo speaks of finding the sati. Otherwise, mind will say, oh, it's so easy. Okay, I have surrendered myself to the mind. It's easy to utter a word. Mind has learned to cheat so much. It uses any kind of word. Mother, I love, that's so easy. But what it really means, after surrender, literally, you have no personality. For surrender implies now as per your will. Surrender means complete obedience. I don't decide on myself. I have given. Surrender means total trust. No fear can ever come to a person who has surrendered to the divine mother. Because he knows she is with me all the time. I don't have to worry about myself, my life, or things around. That is the beauty of surrender. But what does the divine do? She says, divine does not crush you. He aggrandizes your human personality. When We surrender to the Divine Mother that I will obey you, I will live by whatever your will is. Doesn't matter. In the most difficult situations, I will live happily. You know, when Mother went to visit one of the Kirol's house where, I'm forgetting whom she went to visit, and there was the staircase, and below the staircase there was a little room, dark room, small room below the staircase, in which guess who was living? Gangadharaji. Now some of us may have heard about it. He has written a short book of 108 names. And he came to know Mother is coming, so he came out and he is holding hands, waiting for Mother. When Mother comes, she says, "What are you doing here? You are living here?" "Yes, Mother." "Living here?" Then she squirted a bit. "You have given him room here?" And Gagadhar says, "No, no, no, Mother, I am so happy. It is so wonderful. I am always remembering you. It is so nice, Mother." See, he is back. He is happy in that little small room which is dark, not ventilated. No wonder he had supernatural experiences which have been confirmed. So that is the power of surrender. Then you have no demands, no desires, because you know you have surrendered to Divine. He will take care. Imagine if a child says, "Mama, you organize." After that he keeps saying, "Mama, what have you done? What have you not done?" She will say, "You don't worry, I do much better than what you can imagine." So we are like those children who will say, "Mama, you make the food," and then we go and say, "No, no, I want to eat my food." She doesn't want to leave us. So that is the beauty of surrender. Complete self-giving. So only the jiva can do so. The central and spiritual being of mind. No other path. Mind after some time will become restless. Start doubting. The vital will start demanding at some point that, "Okay, I am here, but see what has happened to me." Someone once was telling me, "See, I surrendered myself and after 5 years, this is what happened to me." I said, "You surrendered to the Mother or to the organization or the administration?" "You have surrendered to the Mother, why are you worried? She'll take care of everything." Exactly. Yeah. So, this is because we are Anshaha Sanatana, we are the portion of the Lord. Few lines below, it is this central spiritual being in us who thus enters into a perfect and closely real relation of delight and union with the origin and continent and governing self and power of our existence. So this is the important part. Surrender means the sooner we discover the psychic independence. So all the processes of the Gita, Nishkam, Karma, Equanimity, Remembrance, all this is so that we reach that point. Otherwise, in our ignorance, we say, "I have surrendered." Then we see things are not happening my way. So I say, "I have surrendered myself to you. Why they are not happening my way?" Divine will say, "You have surrendered to me. So why should they happen your way now? They will happen my way. Are you ready for it?" So that's why we have to reach that point. So that whole yoga is to reach this point. That's why it is the supreme secret. When we reach that point, no personal effort, nothing is required. Should the same that everywhere. It is this central spiritual being in us who thus enters into perfect and closely realization. And then again he emphasizes last few lines that though he is achintya-rupa, he cannot come in beyond all that the human mind can conceive. We use terms like love, intelligence, but we don't know others. Intelligence is not like linear. Our intelligence is linear. So we see cause-effect, this linear. So we don't understand. Divine intelligence is global. Simultaneously, it is seeing all the different points that need to be touched, awakened, taken in their own way, which is beyond our comprehension. That's why the divine way cannot be understood by the human, because our intelligence acts linearly in a very small frame of time. So, he says that it is He, ineffable, absolute, but also friend and Lord and enlightener and lover, who is the object of this most complete devotion and approach, and this most intimate inner becoming and surrender. So So that's why people would often ask,
who is the guru in this yoga? So we say, we don't have a guru, we have mother. This question was asked to Sri Aurobindo. He says, we want to form a relation with you like guru. He says, if you want, you can do that. But it, mother said more bluntly, it's coming down few stairs below. This idea that today we have only a guru and sishya. Guru is one aspect of the relationship between divine and the human. He is not just a guru who is giving us a teaching. He is the lover of our soul. He is the friend, the beloved, the paramour. That's how Sri Aurobindo puts it. The paramour. Secretly we love him, although outwardly we are loving this whole world. And he is of course the master under whose banner we fight, the leader, the hero. All relationships. It's, guru is one aspect of it. In Sri Aurobindo's aphorism, he says the divine teacher.
But something much more intimate. So all these relations, this is something very unique about the Sanatana Dharma.
And the Gita brings it so boldly in the forefront. So God is not just up there who is a judge. He has given the law, you follow the law and the book. No. He is not only the giver of the law, he intervenes in the law, changes the law, helps you through it, even lifts you out of it. He has the presidential powers of pardoning the worst of so-called sinners. That's how, even in human beings we have that, no? President can pardon. So this is something very unique and very beautiful. We can play with the Lord, and Mother speaks of it in, there is a whole passage. You should learn to laugh with the Lord. Learn to play with the Lord. And this is, human beings are so serious. So serious. They all the time want to be serious. And then she says, they try to be very perfect by being virtuous. And what happens when you do that? She says they become very boring.
In mother's words, she says, so we have decided we will laugh with the Lord.
And then she adds, and for this, let us avoid people carefully who are very serious, who are extremely virtuous. Something.
She is teaching to go beyond self. And Lord is there, what is our human? So what is the difference between the two? Lord, there are all kinds of philosophy. No? You will say, yes, yes, that is only a shadow.
You turn to the divine, he assumes for our good, but ultimately you will go into the impersonal or something like that.
Boy, so he says, 5:43, Mahayana Buddhists try to, you know, synthesize the two. So, 5:43. So, what is the difference? It is not a negation, fourth line from above. It is not a negation but a fulfillment of all that mind
and life point to and bear in them as their secret and unaccomplished significance. Thus, it is not by a nirvana, an exclusion and negative extinction of all that we are here, but by a nirvana. So there is a difference between the words used. The Gita also speaks about Brahma nirvana. What is the difference? So one is nirvana is an exclusion and extinction. This nirvana is about fulfillment, going beyond the human. So what is to be extinguished here? But by nirvana, an exclusion and negating extinction of ignorance and ego and a consequent ineffable fulfillment of our knowledge and will and heart's aspiration and uplifted a limitless and limitless living of them in the divine, in the eternal. So that's what we see. There is a prayer of the mother. Thou who art the life of my life. The intelligence of my mind. So that's where it's a fulfillment. We are limited and he is the unlimited infinite. By joining with him, whatever is ready and gives itself will become, share the same beauty and infinity. So therefore, the Gita is basically describing two kinds of life. One is a life lived in the ignorance with ego as the leader. Even in its turning toward the God, it calculates what I will get out of it, how I can. So it is, I will do this, so God will do this. I will do this, I will experience this. So it's still the ego. So divine plays along our terms till we reach this point. But there is a life of the ego and ignorance, and there is a life of what we can call as the divine life, or living in the divine, living divinely, not an extinction. So impersonality is a passage towards a greater life. Now here he is not using the word divine life. But if we read the divine life, the life divine, last chapter, we will see Sri Aurobindo is speaking about the Gita. There are two passages very powerful where it speaks about, because Gita has laid the foundation. It doesn't give the transformation of the instruments, and the Divine Mother is not there because transformation is not there. But right up to that point where one is ready to live in the divine, live by the divine, live for the divine, that's what is the great impersonal personality of the Gita. Yes, last chapter. There is, Sri Aurobindo brings out from the Gita, which is amazing. So Gita opens the door. No, see, Sri Aurobindo, if you look at as the avatar after Krishna, he is completing what Sri Krishna initiated. Before Sri Krishna, you don't find this language in the Upanishads. There is worship, there is meditation. Works are there, but secondary. They are subordinated. Mainly religious works, etc. And you have to do works with this. There is all this is there. But Sri Krishna boldly declared that that is still the subject of the Trigona Maya. Trigonatmak Prakriti. He says that that is still the subject of the Vedas. But it's necessary, helpful at a point of time. But the utter self-giving of to the divine, the total abandonment, the Gita brings that for the first time. And Sri Aurobindo picks up from there. See, I'm saying Sri Krishna, Sri Aurobindo and Krishna combine and takes it to the next logical level, that what happens if you give yourself to the divine. So the Gita starts, ends with surrender, and Sri Aurobindo starts with surrender.
So the surrender the mother used to talk about is that same surrender?
Yes.
From Bhagavad Gita?
Yes. It's the same surrender, complete, absolute surrender. So that's where. So then what happens? Page 544. All our dharmas, all the secondary standards by which we determine our view of things and our knowledge and our action, proceed upon this narrow and limiting basis. That is the base of the ego. And to follow them, even in the widest wheelings round our ego center, does not carry us out of this petty circle. So we may do everything right. The last question asked is, have you surrendered yourself completely to the divine? No, sir, I have done everything right. I'm an extremely virtuous man. I have not even thought evil. He'll say, this is the only evil that you are still thinking that you are you. And you have thought or not thought. So this is where the Gita takes that leap. It builds up on the Vedas and the Upanishadic truths. They are very much there. But it takes the next logical leap. It's an evolution from... This is the base of Sanatana Dharma. The Vedas tell us about that fundamental reality which is in this creation. All creation is ultimately, you know, that has sacrificed itself. All that is there. But this next level of the avatar, of the soul giving itself to the divine, this comes in the Gita. And then he describes all the three about the life of Guna, which we can skip right now because we have read it. And then he says something very beautiful. People who are always ticking their check, you know, boxes right. I'm right. I did this right. I did that right. Page 545. Middle, somewhere in the middle. That self-ignorance constitutes the whole vanity of human reason and self-righteousness. This is the right thing to do. That is the right thing to do. It is very difficult to make a sattvic man turn to God. Sri Ramakrishna has said this. He says he is wearing golden bangles. He won't give them. Rajasic man, Arjuna is rajo sattvic. He is wearing bangles of silver. He may give it, take it. But look, I mean, there is a story of Ravindraji who came to ashram and he would not touch eggs, and mother gave him the work of egg distribution. So in the beginning he would just be, he'll find it very difficult to give it. So someone asked him, how could you do it? He says, see, I have to forget all dharmas. Mother's order is the ultimate dharma. So then of course, Rishabh Chand, who wrote Shobindo's biography, is Life Unique, his first task was furniture department to kill the bugs, which khatmal. And that too in such a difficult way those days. Put hot water, they will come out. So he wrote back to Shobindo, sir, I am a Jain. Perhaps mother doesn't know it. So though I am so happy that you have given me a work, accepted me, but just I thought I'll write to you because mother won't know about the Indian background. Shobindo's one line letter, whatever work the mother gives you, do it with surrender. This is your path. He did it. And see what a wonderful life and what a wonderful book. So this is the way those who have gone have shown us. It's not about method, technique. They have their little place, small little place. But the real thing is inside what is happening between you and the divine. That self-ignorance constitutes the whole vanity of human reason and self-righteousness. It is the dark secret lining behind the spotless white outsides of human sainthood and alone makes possible the specious egoisms of knowledge and virtue. And what a sentence here. The best human knowledge is a half knowledge and the highest human virtue a thing of mixed quality. No wonder the Gita was not given to the spotless saints who were there. All around, saints were there at that time. But Sri Krishna didn't call one of them, I am going to tell you the greatest secret. He gives to Arjuna. And we see here, even in terms of action, self-righteous. It's not given to Yudhishthira. It's not given to Bhishma. It's given to Arjuna. It's something very interesting. Because he has given himself. That's something very beautiful about him. Arjuna is the, I mean, he's the hero of heroes. But he has a feminine streak in his nature. And that is that he can surrender himself very completely. As an act of love. So he says, Shishyasteham Sadhima, you tell me what I should do. I don't understand. He doesn't discuss with him based on, in the beginning he says little bit. But he doesn't say, but according to this teacher, according to that Guruji, according to this scripture. He doesn't say any of this. He raises natural, normal questions which a human being would raise. And see what a wonderful scripture is born. And he says that all sattvic people, they carry this inside which is unseen. The dark lining behind the spotless white. And so the first door is, of course, the impersonal. But as he says, something beyond we have to go. And on page 546. So there is the Shara Bhav, the mutable, the Akshara, which is the impersonal. And page 546, somewhere in the middle. And he says how impersonal truth can become a cloak. About 8-9 lines from above. The pursuit of impersonal truth is turned by these influences of the ego, secretly acting from behind, into an unsuspected cloak for a system of intellectual preferences supported by our mind's limiting insistence. And there could be countless examples. One can say, I am impersonal, it doesn't matter what I do, whether I eat, drink, be merry, because I am inwardly free. It becomes a cloak. One can be inwardly, say that I am inwardly impersonal, and act with impunity, destroying things, doing things, and say, well, like the Gita. See, there is a problem of this impersonality. Therefore, he is reminding us. And then few lines below, this impersonal silence, however, is not the last word of wisdom in the matter. because it is not the only way and crown, or not all the way and the last crown of self-realization open to our endeavor. There is a mightier, fuller, more positive spiritual experience in which the circle of our egoistic personality and the round of the mind's limitations vanish in an unwalled infinity of a greatest self and spirit. And yet life and its works not only remain still acceptable and possible, but reach up and out in their to their widest spiritual completeness and assume a great ascending significance. So basically it means, he says in the next page, he says, impersonal means this body, life, mind belongs to the ego and, you know, it goes on its own way. But inwardly I am free. But the Gita is not happy with that. He says, take the next step. Say, this body belongs to the mother. Now this life which I called mine is no more mine, it belongs to the mother. The love within my heart springs from the mother. The thoughts in my brain belong to the mother. Everything in me comes from her and belongs to her. Now you see, life changes. Because then you have to only give sanction, but you can't just give sanction to the play of the ego anymore. It belongs to her. Imagine if the divine gives us something. One way is, I am detached, doesn't matter. Divine may have given, God, my master may have given, but the other is, it's given by the mother, given by the divine. And therefore you keep it most carefully, like the most precious jewel which is with you.
So, the mother is the Mahashakti?
Yes, the supreme Mahashakti. Yes, taken a human body here in this context. Okay, so we will stop here and meet on 15th April.